that clip has sort of gotten popular. So I think I shared it last year with some people privately, so I thought I'd show you all that. And yeah, what he's capable of doing, it kind of, I will say there's a lot of things that sort of get to be normal for us that we don't even think about. That one did surprise me. I gave him the nuts and bolts and I said, see if you can try it, just try it. And then he couldn't do it. He said, I can't do that. And so I said, I thought maybe not, but we'd try it. And then I went on to do some other things. And 10 minutes later, he comes back and he's like jumping up and down and I can do it. And so he showed me how he was doing it and he's been doing it since. So for a title, I had given Fear Not, I have called thee by thy name. And it got changed. I'm not sure where it got changed a little bit. It showed up a little bit different in the program, but that's okay. Fear not, I have called thee by thy name. I've called them by my name, I think it was. And it's not a big deal, but I took that out of Isaiah chapter 43. I'll turn there in a little bit. But as I thought about what I could share this weekend, I started thinking about a lot of the emotions that we find ourselves in as handicapped or as some kind of physical disability, whether it's affecting you or whether it's affecting someone in your family. And I'll just open it up. What's some emotions that we might feel? I'm sure you all have. We all have emotions. And what was the emotion that might have went through your mind, maybe goes through your mind, maybe is in your mind right now? Just a couple.
Frustration.
Mm-hmm.
Fear.
Discouragement. Fear of unknown.
Fear of the unknown. Left out, yeah. I had put down confused, angry, worthless, depressed, afraid were a couple of the emotions that I wrote down. But yeah, and I'll admit, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have felt like I had much to share up here or that. I'm not sure if I've ever shared this before, but there was a time in my life that I wondered what I was like. I hoped I didn't come across like a spoiled brat, but I sort of wondered sometimes. I actually thought about, life is so good. I always get what I want. I mean, really, honestly, is there something that I actually did not get that I really, really wanted? And I actually couldn't think of much that I'd never got that I really wanted. And I didn't think I came across that way, and I hoped I wasn't that way, but I actually wondered. But life has given its challenges. And I thought I'd share a little bit when Wesley asked me to share. I actually, what came to my mind right off, almost first, I was pretty sure you wanted me to talk about Kirkland, and I'm glad to talk about him. I asked if Kirkland wanted to talk, and he didn't want to. So, I thought I'd share a little bit of my journey. Some of you that we come out here year after year know that I've gone through cancer, and I was just getting over some of my chemo treatments a number of years ago when we came out here. So, I share a little bit of that, and then I'll go back to Kirkland, because there's something that happened over that period of time that I think was sort of life-changing for me. April 2020, during COVID lockdown, I started having a lot of back pain, and it was in April, the first symptoms, I would say. In August, September, it was probably the darkest period of my life, honestly, was in August, September of 2020. And it was basically, I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what. And a lot of people didn't seem to get it. Chronic pain is something that I don't think there was nothing to show. I mean, I've told people my back kills, but there was nothing to show for it. I actually would carry things and lift things, and I was doing things. In fact, when I sat down and was still, that's when it would kick in the worst. And so to compensate, I would move and move and move and move and move, and I was a workaholic because there was really nothing else I could do. And so when I told people my back hurt, it's just like, yeah, whatever. But I had no way of expressing it or showing it other than saying, you have no idea. I didn't sleep different nights. I never slept a wink. And just would literally lay on the living room floor and roll back and forth until morning, and I'd get up and go to work. And eventually, complete exhaustion would take over and you'd fall asleep. That was probably the darkest time of my life. And actually, 1 week before my diagnosis, I said to one of my coworkers, I said, what is it like to die? Like, I'm starting to wonder, like, what is it like to die? And I didn't even, I probably didn't tell my wife because I didn't want to scare her, but I was starting to wonder. So October 19th, 2020, 2:30 in the morning, a Monday morning, I was rolling around on the floor. I was scheduled for an MRI, and I told my wife, I said, I can't sleep. She said, why don't you go into the hospital? I said, there's no way I can lay on that board tomorrow morning for an MRI. There's no way on earth. I don't care if it's to save my life. I can't lay still. And we'll just go in and see if they can do something for your pain. So I drove myself into the ER 2:30 in the morning where the MRI was supposed to take place. And I actually was familiar. They had seen me before, some of the same ones. Yeah, we remember you a couple weeks ago being in here for pain. And they said, we can make you comfortable. And they did, and I actually got a couple hours of sleep before my scheduled MRI at like 8:30. So he took me down for that, and I'll never forget being in the ER and expecting to go back to work. You know, this is an MRI, I'm not seeing a doctor, like, they're just gonna take some imaging, I'm going back to work. Doctor came in and he said, we found something on the MRI. He said, there's a lesion in your spine. We don't know what it is. It could be a bacterial infection that could go spread to your brain in a couple hours, and you could be all kinds of things, anything from paralyzed to mental. Almost anything's possible. I didn't really believe them, but whatever. I was glad they found something. I was like, this can't be. I mean, I've been going on this for months. So they took me by ambulance to another hospital. Calling into work and saying I'm not coming in today and I don't know when I'm coming in was kind of pretty earth-shattering for probably a lot of people. And calling my wife and like, I'm not coming home, I'm not going to work, I'm going, you can see me in the hospital whenever you can get yourself free, but I'm headed to the hospital. Again, this is during COVID, things are really locked down, it's a little hard to even get to places. So that was where I was at. That was October 19th, 2020. Wednesday, the 21st, I was still in the hospital. They were still very confused what it was, other than they knew where it was, but they didn't know what it was. And I was really cried out to God over that time. And I said August, September was a really dark time of my life. And twice I had been anointed there at our church. And I remember pretty clearly on Wednesday morning telling God, why I can understand, like, I understand I don't live forever, but I don't understand why Christians get sick. Like, what's the point of this anyway? I have, at that time we had 3 foster girls. I had 3 children that we adopted, and here I am. I got all kinds of things on my plate that I need to be doing. Why? And God came into my room, honestly, that morning. And there was like a flashback of different individuals that I knew personally or knew distantly, but a number of individuals sort of flashed across. No, nothing. I didn't have a vision, but I kind of did. It wasn't with my natural eyes, but with, my mind started seeing pictures of people and places, and I sent this person to this place. I sent this person to this place. A lot of foreign missionaries. And then it was like God spoke to me and said, I sent you to Hershey. And I think the first thing I was like, well, I have a lot of things I need to do. Like, there's a lot of, my family needs me. And he told me, he said, I own the cattle on 1,000 hills. I own the 1,000 hills. This whole world is mine. He said, I can take care of them. And but I have a job for you. And that really, really was life-changing for me. I went from sort of a pity me into what do you have for me? Like, this is kind of exciting. And I started looking for doctors and nurses that I could give my testimony to. And I mean, this is Wednesday morning, and there's not a whole lot of time period in here. And they're taking me away in about an hour to my biopsy. My wife came in about this time, and she's waiting in the room for me. They take me for my biopsy. They come back, and by this time they're saying we're not really seeing anything rapidly progressing here. We don't know what it is, but you can go home until probably 2 weeks till the results come back. So I'm sitting there waiting for my discharge paperwork, and I really believe, because I don't know how else to explain it, there must have been an angel that came into my room that hour. A nurse came in and told my wife is there to witness it. A nurse came in, and I had seen her once or twice, but I don't remember her name. She came into my room, and she told me, she said, the biopsy's done. It really appears as though we're rather certain you have lymphoma, but we're going to have to wait till the final results come in, but that's probably lymphoma. Okay, what's that? And she said, you can Google it. Okay. And she left. My wife heard it. I had no idea what lymphoma was. I'd never heard of it. And so some kind of cancer. Okay. And so I discharged and I went home, and I'm like, for the next 2 weeks, I'm Googling lymphoma and diagnosis, and it's kind of coming on me sort of gradual. And I'm like, okay, so I have a type of cancer. Well, it's actually very treatable. Not easy. Most often it's chemo. I'm sure I won't have to take chemo. It'll probably just be radiation, because radiation they use too. So I don't know. Chemo sounds scary. But to find out 2 weeks later, yes, I did have lymphoma. And when I told the doctors, yeah, that's what I thought, they looked at me weird, like, we don't do that. That's not pot. Like, that's not pot. You can look at my Google searches. That's what I've been searching for 2 weeks, lymphoma. God must have used an angel, I don't know, to tell me, because I already had my diagnosis before the doctor did, and I had no idea what lymphoma was. I couldn't make that word up. I had no idea what it was. The clearness of God sending me, and that's sort of where I want to go with what I want to talk about here. That was life-changing for me, into accepting God's will. I often wondered what it'd be like to go, you know, as a Christian, be martyred and, you know, burned at the stake, or how could people sing? How could you? I don't know how you could do it, but I kind of know how. I actually went to Hershey excited. Like, cancer didn't scare me. It didn't. It just did not. It really did not. I remember breaking the news to our children. There was different ones that are like, wow, it didn't. I'm sent to Hershey. I really am sent there, and this is what I have to do. I'm gonna do it, and I can't wait to see what God wants to do through this. So I'd like to read Isaiah 43, first 12 verses. It says, "But now thus saith the Lord that created thee, O Jacob, and he that formed thee, O Israel, fear not." We talked about fear being a common emotion. "Fear not, for I have redeemed thee. I have called thee by thy name. Thou art mine." This was God's word to the nation of Israel that had sinned and was in captivity. And I'd like to make that personal to us too. We are grafted in. We are grafted into that vine. We are as adopted children of Israel. And God calls each of us, and he calls us by our name. And when we do not have to understand everything about what's all going on, but if we do understand that God's in control and that he has my best interest in mind, and he has a calling for me. You know, when we get a flat tire along the road, what do we think about? Are we tempted to cuss? Where are we tempted to just really spout off about how bad, or do we say, you know what? Is God delaying me because he wants me to speak to someone at the next gas station? I don't know. I mean, God uses some crazy things sometimes. I don't think God causes bad things in our life. I don't believe that. But I do believe God allows those things. And I don't know yet today why God sent me to Hershey. I don't. I'm not going to claim that at all. I can think of a few things that did happen there. Whether there was the reason, I don't know. But when we accept God's calling in our life, whatever it is, then the fear is gone because we realize that there's someone bigger than me. There's someone bigger than all this that's in control. And he not only just allowed this, in a sense he chose me for this. In a sense he called me. He's very much involved in what's going on here. I sort of wandered from there. I have, thou art mine. Verse 2, when thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee, and through the rivers they shall not overflow thee. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. For I am the Lord thy God, the Holy One of Israel, thy Savior. I gave Egypt for thy ransom, Ethiopia and Sebia for thee. Since thou wast precious in my sight, thou hast been honorable, and I have loved thee. Therefore I will give men for thee and people for thy life. Fear not, for I am with thee. I will bring thy seed from the east and will gather thee from the west. I will say to the north, give up, and to the south, keep not back my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth. Even every one that is called by my name, for I have created him. I have created him for my glory. I have formed him. Yea, I have made him. I thought of that for some of us here that are born with some of these conditions. Some of us have had accidents. Some of us were born with this. God has formed us. He's created us. Verse 8, bring forth the blind people that have eyes and the deaf that have ears. Let all nations be gathered together and let the people be assembled. Who among them can declare this and show us former things? Let them bring forth their witness that they may be justified, or let them hear and say it is truth. Verse 10, ye are my witnesses, saith the Lord, and my servant whom I have chosen, that ye may know and believe me and understand that I am he. Before me there was no God formed, neither there be after me. I, even I, am the Lord, and beside me there is no Savior. I have declared and have saved, and I have showed when there was no strange God among you. Therefore, ye are my witnesses, saith the Lord, that I am God. That's your broad calling on your life, is that you're a witness that people will know that he is God. And really, its perspective on life is, you know, as I walked through that whole journey and going multiple, and I'm not a patient person. I don't have time for driving back and forth. I don't have time for hospitals, doctors. I don't have time for any of that. And yet, I was going 3-4 times a week, 45 minute drive one way to the hospital for blood work, for chemo, for the chemo, I'd sit there for half a day. Radiation was a couple minutes, but it was overwhelming, the amount of doctor visits, and I almost lived there. And I was in the hospital 3 days when I was diagnosed, and I was in almost a week at one point in time for it was a low period in my chemo. There were sort of came down with a number of different things. Just my immune system was, in short, my immune system was pretty well shot, and I was starting to pick up some other things. Not having patience to do all that, I feel God worked a miracle in my life that I could do that, and actually did it almost excitedly. That's just not me. And I do believe, I don't know why, but that calling was so clear back October 2020 that I don't doubt it today one bit, that God had called me. Today I have been in remission. Cancer has been in remission 3 years. And I'm thankful. I do believe that God has healed me. A testimony I have given different ones. I was diagnosed with cancer. I won't go into a lot of details on that. That's not why we're here. But my type of cancer was lymphoma, and yet they found it in my bones, which is supposedly very, very late stages. A lot of that doesn't quite make sense. But they did tell me that my back, we're not even going to worry about your back. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. And the cancer is going, the chemo treatments and radiation is only going to further deteriorate your back. And we really don't know. We'll worry about that later. They didn't even want to talk about it. They just said, right now we're trying to keep you alive. I went a year later back to the spine doctor, the one that originally diagnosed with cancer and passed me on to oncology. And he wanted to know my pain levels. I said, nothing. He looked at the x-rays. He said, well, it looks the same as a year ago. The bones must have healed. That you don't have pain, they have to be healed. I don't really have anything. I was expecting this and this and this and this and this, but I don't have any pain. And today I honestly have less pain today than I did when I was 20 years old. And I tell people, I must have cancer for years. And they said, well, that's not possible. I don't know. Then God healed more than just cancer. I don't know what to tell you, but some days I feel back there. I have feeling. It's not numb. I have feeling. So God is a good God. God is a big God. And I did tell some doctors that. Some listened, and some actually sort of didn't like to hear that. So, but I'm thankful. Moving on to Kirkland. I don't want to lift this up as some sort of superheroes, but we're not. We're just people. But there is some parallels that we have as adoption that really connects with God and what must be like for him and us. And many of you didn't choose your situations, and people, every once in a while I say I have a son without arms. Oh man, I'm sorry to hear that. Like, I don't get it, because we adopted him, so really I have no choice to say, well, I don't know, we picked him like that, so I don't know. God picked us too, he picked us the mess that we are. I don't know why he picked me. I don't know why I picked Kirkland something. I don't know. I heard about him, and my wife and I heard about him, said we want him, and that's where we're at. Kirkland was born in Cincinnati, Ohio. His mother was at a party, wasn't watching her drink closely, and woke up later that night to realize what had happened, and to this day we don't know his father. Faced with a lot of drama over that, I think that was largely why she chose to have him adopted out. There was a lot of family drama over that. A match was found, and I think it was 5 months into the pregnancy, during an ultrasound, they discovered the baby within her womb did not have arms. The family that was going to adopt him decided this was not what they were willing to handle or want, and they backed out. And with no one stepping up to the plate, he was just there. And they were searching. They were searching for someone to adopt him. They started reaching out to lots of other agencies. I think I have this correctly. I think they sort of knew that it's an interesting fact that conservative people tend to take special needs a little quicker. So they were reaching into some of those avenues too, and they were grasping at everything they could find. Remember, he's in Ohio, and this somehow makes it to Lancaster County. So, in this whisper down the lane thing, we weren't searching for any of this, and we just heard about this baby to be born without arms, and we're like, and I think God was preparing us for it, because when I was just youth, when my wife and I weren't courting or anything, I had watched a video, my parents had got it, of Nick, and probably a lot of you have seen Nick, and wow, he's about my age, and this was kind of Interesting. And I was really wowed by it. And so I invited a couple of youth over to our place, which my wife-to-be, which neither of us had any clue at that time, was part of that youth that came over to our place, and we watched this video together. Neither one of us really forgot it. I don't know why exactly, but when we heard about this baby to be born without arms, we both thought, Nick, like, why wouldn't anybody want him? I mean, Nick didn't have arms or legs. This guy's got legs. I mean, this is a piece of cake. Maybe not. So through a long series of trying to figure this all out, we had to track this all down to where this was actually at. And yes, this was true. And yes, there wasn't anybody in line to adopt him. Very, very unusual. But they wanted, like, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with adoption, but they wanted quite a sum of money right up front to even get started. Well, that's ridiculous. I looked at the paperwork that they handed me, and there's a 40% survival rate. I'm not dishing out thousands of dollars for a baby that's better chance of not even gonna make it. And I just said, no. And my wife said, are you sure? I'm like, if he's for us, then he'll be there for us. I guess that was true. I guess he was for us. He was born August 2nd, 2011. Correct? Yes. The agency reached out to us, even though we'd not filled out any paperwork. They really had no options. So about 2 weeks after he was born, we made a trip to Cincinnati. We're from Pennsylvania here, about 2 hours away from here, Myerstown area. So South Central, I don't know, PA. So we had about 8.5 hours to Cincinnati. We took the trip out there. I told my wife said, I don't want to do anything until I see him. I'm like, have you ever seen a baby you don't like? She said, no, but I want to see him. So we go to the hospital, we meet the mother, and she took us to the room, and we saw Kirkland. And we're leaving there, and my wife says, I want him. I said, I told you. So we drove straight from Cincinnati back to Lancaster County to adoption agency and started our paperwork. We raced through that paperwork at lightning speed, and Kirkland was discharged 3.5 months after his birth. We were able to bring him home from the hospital, which that was a lot of quick paperwork to get all that in place. But we did. I'm not sure if I used, I had it in my notes here, Oliver. He was named Oliver at birth. I don't know if I used that word at all or not, that name. But I'd like to use it just for a minute. Oliver was born without arms, without a future. His lower jaw had not grown correctly and was extremely small. It was way back in his tongue was back in his throat, and if it would not have been for surgery, he would have eventually either suffocated or starved. His airway was barely open. So they had to put a tube down his throat right away for breathing and for food. His left foot was clubbed, his right leg was missing the fibula, which is the small bone that goes from your knee to your ankle. He's missing that small bone. You have a big one, a small one. His right foot only has 4 metatarsals, which is the bones that go out to your toes. He only has 4. Probably because of that, his little toe sticks straight out the side. His backbone, although it's not near as bad as it was today, did have some scoliosis, did have sort of an S shape to it. He had tracheomalacia, which is a soft esophagus and making it difficult to swallow, or acid reflux is a problem. He had an irregular shaped stomach. No one has been able to explain that better to us at all. Every time we talk to a new doctor, he goes, what? That's what they say. And after a while, they're like, oh, yeah. And I don't know. That's kind of where it ends. So it does, I think, maybe affect a little bit of his eating. Doesn't really have, no one's ever diagnosed as anything different. No one's sort of, well, that's different, and they move on. But his biggest needs was a family, someone that would love him. And I just want to say how many, you know, we have all, hopefully we have been, I'm hoping that you all have moved on, that, but we've all been an Oliver at one time. We've all have been without hope. We've all been, what Kirkland really, really needed was a loving family. He didn't even have that. Like, he's just this science experiment in the hospital in Cincinnati. And what he really, really needed was a home. And someone that cared about him, someone that loved him. Outlook is pretty dim. Like, what chances does he have? What's he going to do in life without arm, with this handicap? What is there? What options are there? In fact, he doesn't even have a family. No one even really cares at this point. But, and again, I feel God called us just like he's called each one of you for a specific purpose. And he called us. And anyway, we show up about 2 weeks after he was born, and, you know, he looked at us for the first time, and we looked at him for the first time. And we knew why we were there, but he didn't know why we were there. And, you know, but we loved him. And you know, we go racing back home to do our paperwork. Kirkland moved on to have some really painful surgeries where they lengthened his jaw out. They broke his jaw and wired it apart so that it could actually grow together so that his tongue could come back out, so that he could function at all. And there he was in a hospital for a month, just sort of laying there with his mouth wired open and looked like some kind of Holocaust victim or something. But, you know, by this point in time, there's someone that's actively... It was weird. It was sort of different to be in Pennsylvania, and we have a son in Ohio. And people, doctors actually, once paperwork progressed enough, doctors would call us and they'd have us actually verbal consent to different things. We're like... We're giving verbal consent to this baby that, yeah, it's kind of weird. It's ours, but yet, you know, we've held him a couple times, but wow, the responsibility kind of hits you. But you know, again, compare that to God and how he looks. You know, we're not in, he's up there in heaven. We don't see him. We see through a glass darkly, but God is there and he's in control of our lives. And just like we had to sign off on each of those procedures so they could even, some we didn't, some we actually said, you know what, this is starting to sound like he's a guinea pig. This isn't necessary. And some, there was actually one or two we stopped. And God's up in heaven doing the same thing for you or me and saying, no, that's too far. You know, you can't do that. You can't touch him. And there's some things he's allowing in their life for a purpose. And there's procedures Kirkland's going through, Oliver's going through, and he's not understanding why. But back in Pennsylvania, we had a goal. We had someone that we wanted to make out of him. God has something he wants to make out of you. And it's okay. You don't have to know why. Moving on, because of his surgery, his mouth is very sensitive to anything. Yeah, we've had a lot of eating issues. He still eats his food ground. Doesn't quite get enough. They put a G-tube in before he left the hospital so that we could feed him through directly into his stomach, because he just never can get enough down. Tracheomalacia, his jaw surgery, his irregular stomach. I don't know. Not sure what all combination of that all, probably. But we brought him home the week of Thanksgiving, gave him a new name, Kirkland, Oliver Bross. There's a new name for each one of us when we get to heaven. We go home. We each have a new name. So, you know, what I challenge you, that's... Kirkland didn't have any choice at all. We do have a choice, and I just throw it out there. Are you an Oliver or are you a Kirkland? Have you been adopted into the family or not? There's a huge difference. There's a huge difference. You're just a guinea pig in a hospital if you're an Oliver. If you're a Kirkland, there's someone over top of all of this that you can't even see that's making decisions for you. So he came home. Now, when we go home, we're going to be perfect. Kirkland wasn't. Story breaks down there a little bit, but he came home. We did correct his club foot. Again, he didn't understand that, but in fact, some doctors argued with us and said, well, they thought this was cruel and unusual that we should do such a thing like that. He'll never walk anyway, and well, he walks fairly well. He can't walk distances, but he can definitely walk. He still is missing his fibula. It's of no real concern whatsoever. Other than there's muscles that are going different. It's affecting his muscle situation, and actually complications of that is one, his, what is that, your feet, femur. His one leg is growing shorter than the other one because of the muscles constricting and stunting the growth. So his one leg is shorter than the other one. Probably just a prosthesis or a lift or something in the future as he grows. So, originally, and you know, God's in control of these little things in life. Originally, the doctors talked about this little toe that sticks out the side, and it's just going to be in the way as he gets older, and will shoes even fit? And we all talked about having it removed in one of his multiple surgeries when he's under anesthesia. He'll just take that little toe off. He still has his toe today. I don't know. Somehow it escaped all the, every time, well, not this time, but next time. And now when we talk to him about taking his little toe off, he kind of cringes and, oh, not my toe. He doesn't seem to bother him. He runs around. I stub my little toe. I mean, it doesn't stick straight out the side. Yet I've never seen him stub his toe. So I don't know. He seems to do fine. And he's quite happy with his little toe that sticks straight out the side. Somehow he gets in shoes, too. I don't understand that. It works. I don't know. His scoliosis is still uncorrected, and it has gotten worse. We have sort of delayed in some of that, hoping that there'll be some advances. There is some things happening in some of that. The side effects of straightening that out, no matter how it's done, there's a lot of side effects. Will he be able to still walk? I'm not sure, because he balances by flexing, and if we take away that flexing, I don't know. I'm not sure what he's going to be like after that surgery. And so, yeah, there's a lot of unknowns. That's probably the biggest one that hangs over us is what do we do with this? And you know, I'm still in the middle of figuring it out. And I thought about something probably all of us are probably in the middle of figuring out, or some of us are still in the middle of figuring out what to do for your own self. You know, what's the next step? Or what's the next step to figure out my child or my loved one? Or what's the next step? And you start to feel a little bit like, am I playing God in this whole thing? And like, well, you almost feel uncomfortable. What should I do? Should I go through this or leave it up to God? What should I do? A really comforting verse to me has been in James 1, 5 to 8. I just like the simplicity of it. James 1, 5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. There's nothing complicated. Just ask of God. That giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. There's no strings. Like, just ask and I'll give it to you. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed about. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. I think it's simpler than we make it a lot of times. When we ask God for wisdom in deciding whatever it is, whether it's a physical, whatever, when we're asking God for wisdom, I think James says it pretty clearly. We better expect an answer. A couple years ago, I think it was sort of through some of my cancer journey and figuring all it out and seeing some of these verses in a new light. And when I ask God for wisdom, do I believe it? I have to confess, in the past, I did not. I just kind of, well, maybe he'll answer and maybe he won't. It's kind of hit or miss. It doesn't say that. It says he will answer. And when I started praying, expecting an answer, I've been amazed. Like, it's not complicated. God does answer. Sometimes it's little. Sometimes it's not always that much. And there's another verse that's meant a lot. 1 Corinthians 2:16. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. God's mind is in, the Holy Spirit's in me. Like, it's still small, but God talks to me. It's not complicated. It's just, it's sometimes it's happening right in here. I don't have to see a vision. I don't have to have a dream. God's mind, it can just sort of come. I have the mind of Christ. And then when I doubt it, I'm doubting God. And so when it's kind of simple. When I'm stuck with something, I pray, and God give me wisdom. When that little random thought comes in, I don't dismiss that. That's God. God's talking to us. Another thing I think we do sometimes is we sort of confuse it when we think God answered, and then we act that, and then we don't get the results we want. Then we think we must have messed up. I'm not so sure that that's true either. In fact, I thought about it this morning. I got up early and was thinking about sharing what I was sharing here. And there's so many people here. Right? Each one of us is here because of something that didn't work out the way we thought was going to work out. And yet we don't doubt God now, do we? So when we act upon what we believe God's telling us and it doesn't work the way we thought, it doesn't necessarily mean that God didn't speak to us. I think we should never, when we ask God, when we simply ask in full faith, believing it, I think we should act upon it. And it's not complicated. When God tells us something, take it. Take it as faith and believe it. I am running out of time. I usually do. I did ask Kirkland, I said, aren't you going to give me anything to talk about? I said, well, what do you like to do? What should I tell people that you like to do? What does a boy without arms do? Like, we see it all day long, but what's your hobbies? And so we did work at this together. It was more random. It wasn't real official here, but I was asking him through the days. And his hobbies, by his own words, he likes to read, and he reads and reads and reads. Reading, fishing whenever someone will take him fishing, playing in our frog pond out front of our house. He plays hours in that frog pond. He has a little boat that he pushes around in his frog pond. That's just his size. The creek is too big. Big ponds are too big, but that frog pond is just his size. He loves to go biking. I bought a bike that piggybacks onto my bike, and he can pedal, and he loves it back there. He loves biking. Playing in the snow. He wears his boots, and he has to take them off to do something. He will, and he'll put them back on again. But yes, he loves playing in the snow. Many times he just walks around. You wonder why it would be so fun, but he loves it. I don't know why, but he loves it. Somehow, I have a video clip of that on my phone too. Somehow he's managed to balance himself in a sled. He goes down a hill, and this winter they made a little jump. And he would go by himself in a little plastic sled, go across this jump and actually catch a little bit of air and land this thing. And I would fall off the sled with arms not hanging on, and he doesn't even have arms to, I don't know, somehow he stays on the sled. Playing in the snow or mud. Right now it's mud. And one day I came home from work and he was covered in mud head to toe. And he had heard stories about me when I was little. And he was like, I want to be like you when you were little and when you played in the mud. So he went out and literally rolled in the mud and had mud in his hair and in his everywhere. So I guess I asked for that one. So, yeah, Kirkland is always happy, almost always happy. He's very expressive, and 99% of the time he's happy. The 1% that he's upset, he's pretty upset. But he likes mowing the yard, assembling the bolts that I had here. He has a real mower, or an Amish mower, some people call it, but he pushes his mower around the yard with his, just gets the handle up against his neck, and he pushes his mower through the yard. Sweeping, cleaning, he likes to clean the mom's cupboards the best he can from, he gets up the first 2 feet, which does make it handy. You don't have to reach down that low. He gets the bottom part. We do have an ongoing relationship with his mom. His birth mom came in this summer for the first time, this past summer, to visit us, and came in on sat was with us Saturday, and came with us to church, and then after that she went back home to Ohio. Sounds like she maybe will do it again, but we have an ongoing relationship, a very good relationship with his mom. He does call her different times. On the phone, I have an iPad, and we'll FaceTime on the iPad where he can talk to his mom. And it's been a good relationship, really, with her. She's never pushed anything on us or made us feel like we did anything wrong, or but he does every once in a while. When we had the foster girls, he would ask quite a bit. Can I talk to mom? It was kind of this whole thing. They're talking to their mom and dad, and it kind of backed off again a bit, but he definitely remembers that he's from Ohio. We're okay with that. He seems to handle it fairly well. He's a Cincinnati Bengals fan, which we're not really into sports, but he's a Bengal. Anytime he sees Cincinnati Bengals sign, he's all excited because that's my hometown. He doesn't remember any of it, but anyway. God, I do need to wrap it up. God has a calling for each of us. Hopefully you can be encouraged by that. A year and a half ago, he did have a situation where I think it's obvious his handicap played in there, but we were at a family party, and there was a pool, and he was playing in the pool, and I said, "You must stay in your inner tube," and I had walked away. I was texting someone at the time, so I actually have a pretty good timeline, but I wasn't watching the pool for maximum 4 minutes, 3 to 4 minutes that I had walked away from the pool, but there was lots of other people all around there. The inner tube that he was sitting in, the seat broke out. And so in an instant, he went from being in this inner tube, this really large inner tube that you can't fall out of and it can't flip over and, nothing can happen, to being underwater and this whole big thing is covering him up so that no splashing, there's no sign of anything going on, until one of the other children in the pool saw him. And it was actually, I think he had goggles. He was watching him underwater, and he was trying to watch this boy without arms. Like, what does a boy without arms do in the water? And he's watching it. Like, this doesn't seem right. Well, no, it's not right, but this boy didn't quite. So he goes over and pulled him out of the water. And by this point in time, he was not breathing. There was no heartbeat. He was totally blue. When I got to the pool, they were screaming that Kirkland had drowned, and I got to the pool, and my wife was doing CPR, and I started doing CPR, and there was so much water, we couldn't get him brought around, and an EMT was also there and came running over and took over with me, and a couple minutes into it, he did start to breathe. It was really shallow at first. The ambulance came. They got him on oxygen in the ambulance, and within minutes, he started crying instantly as soon as he was on oxygen. And By the time we made it, the 40-minute drive to the hospital, he was 100%. This was on July 4th, and we were going to watch fireworks that evening. And he asked me, he said, are we going to watch fireworks yet tonight? And I said, I don't think so. And right like that, he starts crying, and I'm like, okay, let's find something else to talk about. Like, I think that's when I realized this guy's back 100%. And we knew one of the people that was on the ambulance, and he puts his head back, and he sees this woman. He's like, Amanda, what are you doing here? Just, he was back 100%. And I think it spoke to me, you know, God has a purpose for each one of us. We wonder why some of these things happen to us. You know, Kirkland probably wondered why this surgery in his mouth as a baby. I don't, you know, we wonder why. Why does God bring these things into our lives? A lot of times we never do know, not in this earth. But God is there and God is watching. God, you know, God's preventing even keeping us even alive, you know. He's allowing some things to happen and disallowing some other things to happen. He's in control. Let's trust God in it. Hopefully that can be an encouragement to you all that God is in control. So yeah, God bless you all.